Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. Today, I'm joined by cultural commentator and author Peter York to chat through a few recent art exhibitions. We'll be discussing Victorian sculpture at Tate Britain. We'll visit a replica sitting room of the late Scottish artist Craigie Aitchison. And we'll be discussing social observation at a photography exhibition in the Netherlands. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Victorian art's had a bad rap for years. It's easy to be sniffy about sculpture from that era. The exhibition at Tate Britain, Sculpture Victorious, has had very mixed reviews. Now, Victoria's reign was a golden age for sculpture. Some would argue not artistically, but certainly in terms of volume. So there was a huge expansion in the production of sculpture, and the show gives us a fairly in-depth exploration of the artistic and historical developments of this very prolific time. Peter, welcome. Why and for whom was all this sculpture being churned out?
Larger and wider markets. So, for instance, we take a very basic market. Representations of the Queen Empress herself, made in Britain and sent to all corners of the world. When the map was pink, we had to make a lot of British sculpture showing the Queen Empress all over the place. So, for instance, there are examples there of there's a whole room devoted to imagery of Queen Victoria, different points in her life, produced at different levels of competence for different places. Then you have things which are, you know, almost mass-produced for increasing middle-class markets because of new technology enables you to make larger editions out of bronze and quasi bronze. So more sculpture, more civic pride, more sculpture up in front of the big town hall in the growing northern town. So more sculpture everywhere for everyone. And the sort of conception of sculpture rather shifted. So the prize piece in this particular exhibition, the one which is the cover star, the poster boy, is a ceramic elephant from a china shop.
Which might not be classed as sculpture at all.
Even I, generous and inclusive and loving as I am, I thought, blimey, I know that elephant. I've been introduced to that elephant. It comes from the very classy Thomas Good china shop in Mayfair. And that's why I recognised it. But I hadn't quite thought of it as sculpture.
Now, you talk about the map being pink and a lot of the work could be deemed to be hugely politically incorrect now. The sculpture was a way to record the reach of the empire, really, wasn't it? There's one particularly disturbing piece about a slave being sold.
Yes, there is. And there are counterparts. I mean, to be fair, we read it in different ways in different times. We read endorsement into it now because of the history of slavery and our guilt. But in fact, you might have read it at the time as being, a plea for sympathy because, you know, we were already into a period when that sculpture was conceived, when slavery was on its way out. And there are precedents in the ancient world for sculptures of slaves and talking about slaves. But it's a worrying moment because a lot of the world has slavery. A lot of the world has slavery now.
Of course, any sculpture, any exhibition of Victorian sculpture wouldn't be complete without some kind of representation of Alfred Gilbert's Eros, which is probably the most famous Victorian sculpture in the world.
It is the most famous. It's the most visited, etc. It's made of aluminium.
Really?
Now, this is the important thing. It appears to be a bronze, but the whole question of using new technologies and new materials. So, for instance, Eros is made of aluminium because that was the way to make it. That was because of its lightness. It gave you the ability to make a statue in that sort of active mode, that sort of training shoe mode, in the way he did, and then it's been bronzified. You know, you don't know that it's aluminium.
Well, of course, you can see the Eros original at Piccadilly Circus, and you can see a representation of it at Sculpture Victorious. That's on at Tate Britain until the 25th of May. We turn now to an exhibition that's just closed. There's a wonderful book, however, that does go alongside it, which is available now. And the venue itself is fascinating. Craigie Aitchison, A Life in Colour by Kate Haste is the book. And Craigie Aitchison Recreated was the title of the show at the Aldeburgh Beach Lookout. Peter, tell us a little bit about this Scottish artist.
Well, Craigie Aitchison, Craigie Aitchison is a cult. He was a cult figure. His work was cultish. It's got some of the qualities of what we might call sophisticated primitives. It's very simple. It seems to be very simply conceived by actually a very sophisticated person. It's figurative, but there's the minimum of fuss. There are bright colours, and it features things you might think of as very traditional subjects or slightly sentimental subjects. So it features what look almost like 1930s or 1920s pictures of black people, young black men and young black women. There are pictures of dogs, pet dogs, like his own pet dog. There are pictures of crosses and things like that, all carried out in what I would call almost a faux naive way that appeals very much to the same sorts of people. Not quite the same, but as Mary Fedden or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of sophisticated primitive. It's cultish. It's well known, very much collected by the people who like it, and are very expensive. And he was cultish because he was, you know, what I remember of him, he always seemed terribly old. And of course, he can't have been when I first met him. He can't have been terribly old. And he talked in that rather simple way of using simple words to describe quite complicated things. You know, that thing of being childlike and so on. And in fact, he wasn't any of those things. He came from a rather smart, sophisticated background.
Mm. The show itself was actually a recreation of his sitting room.
Absolutely. And there you see it was recreated in part in this fascinating sort of little tower gallery on the coast in Aldeburgh, which is the artiest of arty Suffolk towns. And I was there, I think it's 3 weeks ago, a month ago. And I went there, because I knew that they were recreating, aiming to recreate Craigie, and because I found it very compelling, you know, and having known him a bit over time, known people who modelled for him, and known what the cult was about. And so what you do is you recreate the colours, because he had very bright, very bright greens and pinks and so on in his wall in his South London house. And you use some of the iconic things, which are, I suppose, what we call popular, early popular culture, folk art things that he liked to have around. And it's, you might say, oh, this is rather whimsical taste, but it's very, very appealing. It's a naive response to what's around in the world. And it's an old man having things he remembers from quite early in his life, and positively in his childhood. And there's a lot of dog stuff.
The venue itself, you mentioned this wonderful tower, and actually what Caroline Wiseman, who curated that particular show but also runs the venue, does is she has a different artist in residence almost on a weekly basis.
Yes.
And it's also a club. It's quite a unique way of setting up.
It's a very attractive way of talking about art, creating an art forum for real live people, and of course for selling it. So I thought long and hard about buying a limited edition of one of Craigie's pictures of a young black woman who just happened to be somebody I had known. I thought about it and I might end up buying it.
Craigie Aitchison, A Life in Colour by Kate Haste is out now. That's the book that went along with the exhibition. And the sculptor Tesney Borman will be the next artist to be featured at the Aldeburgh Beach Lookout. Now, finally, as I have Peter York in the studio with me, I'm fascinated to get the take of a man who's such a compelling master of social observation, notably in Style Wars and the documentation of that unique British social group, the Sloane Ranger, on a show which records numerous fashion tribes and has been on at the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. So it's called Exactitudes, Ari and Ellie. It's by photographer Ari Verschlees and profiler Ellie Utenbrucht. Peter, how did you find this show, given that it is your area?
I love it. I was amazed when I first saw Ari and Ellie's work back in, I think, 2007. I didn't know anything about it. I was introduced to it via a London department store where they were having a show. And I was amazed at their ability to find strands in closed configurations, the way people put themselves together, and attitudinal configurations, the way that they compose their body, their stances, so that you could go out and find people who not only looked like each other and were wearing the same clothes as each other, but were making the same postures as each other. And they did it in a very compelling way. And you suddenly thought, yes, there are those women about. There are those guys about. And that was, you know, I think I'm doing it in my head all the time. And they had done it, you know, they'd spied kinds of people that I hadn't spied. And I was very impressed and very jealous.
What sort of tribes? Because it's geographical street styles and different locations over 20 years. So which locations and which sort of tribes?
They've been around the world. But when I say they've been around the world, in fact, it's about 20% of the world. It's the richer bit of the world that gives them their material, because if you're at a subsistence level, then you can't respond in this way. You can't express yourself in your clothes in the same way that you can if you're in a Western or an emerging country, where you can buy the clothes you want instead of the ones you get. And you can, you know, for women, you can make yourself up to look a certain way, colour your hair, all those things that create a stance. And then you look at other people, you look at media, you look at movies, and out of that develops a whole sort of body map of stances, a way of looking at the camera, a way of looking at the world. So it's 20% of the world, not the full 100%. And that'll grow as people get richer and more informed. Mm. And the internet is doing a lot about that. So, for instance, when I first wrote about them, and I first wrote about them, I think, in 2008, I started with the whole thing, and this will sound amazingly ignorant, about bears. The whole thing about bears, and I looked at a whole, I talked to them first before they went out in London and saw what there was in London. And then what they do is show on a wall a mass of Polaroids of people who are astonishingly alike. And then they think up a title and a characterization of those people. And I said, who are those people? And they said, they're bears, and looked at me as if I was unutterably ignorant. And of course I thought, yeah, I know what that is. I just didn't quite know the name, the word for it.
Yes, yeah.
And you could see these guys looked astonishingly alike, and they were making the same thing at the camera. They were creating the same relationship with the camera. They were a part of a community, and you thought, yes, of course they are.
Are these styled photographs? Does it take place in a studio are they posing, or is it street scenes?
No, it's styled. It's styled to emphasize the similarity. They pick up on people at first in terms of how they look and what they're wearing. And then they take them into a studio and they dramatize the similarities by making people, you know, drape their hands across their chests in the same way, or high five in the same way, so that you can see absolutely, my God, yes. So there's a bit of artifice and a bit of dramatization there, but they start with They don't work over the pictures. They don't Photoshop them, and they don't cast. They find people in the streets. Then they dramatize those similarities. They will, get, people maybe to cinch in their belts or something like that, and to make a similar gesture.
Worth the trip for you? What did you take away from the show?
I absolutely loved it. There we were, in this case, at the end of December of last year, and I went there to make a speech about it. I so loved it. And to talk to this very sophisticated young Amsterdam audience. And Amsterdam is a smaller town than London, so they're very, very much at the centre of what Amsterdam, artistic Amsterdam, is like. And ask the question, how do you feel about this way of judging books by their covers, about this, are you in a group and pleased about it, or out of a group, or borderline, or how do you feel? And it was fun to open that dialogue with groovy young artistic Amsterdam.
Excellent. Well, that exactitudes. Arjen Ely is currently on show at the Netherlands Photo Museum until May the 17th. The book of the same name is out now. And if you want a really in-depth look at other style tribes, do look up the work of my guest today, Peter York, Style Wars, as well as the delightful Sloane Rangers Handbook, the insightful collection of essays, Modern Times, and the fascinating, if slightly stomach-churning, Dictators' Homes, all still in print and available. And a brand new book Peter's just released. It's called Authenticity is a Con. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be reviewing The Week in Music. But for now, thanks for listening.